Good morning. I'm Rachel Miro, and this is the California Report. The first patient in California suspected of carrying Ebola is being held in an isolation unit in a Kaiser hospital in Sacramento. Test results are expected back from the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention in Atlanta in a couple of days, although doctors here say the likelihood it's Ebola is low. San Francisco Public Health Officer Tomas Aragon says the likelihood of an Ebola outbreak in California is low, too, because we have strict protocols in place to contain any cases that turn up.
It's not rocket science. It's not high tech, but it has to be very disciplined. In the U.S., people are very well trained, and they have the resources to be able to do this kind of work.
The CDC has issued extensive guidelines on how to spot and treat Ebola patients, and hospitals all over the U.S. are on alert for patients who have recently traveled to West Africa. While many run from the Ebola outbreak there, some brave souls are running towards the region to help. Dr. James Appel is one of those, trained in the Inland Empire at the Loma Linda University School of Medicine. He's been working for Adventist Health International at hospitals in Chad for the last decade. The Seventh-day Adventist Church supports roughly 30 hospitals in addition to the medical school. Last week, Dr. Appel flew to Liberia to keep the doors open at Cooper Adventist, a small hospital in the capital of Liberia, Monrovia. Dr. Appel says the country is shutting down around him.
There's a curfew that's being initiated. Many businesses are not open. All the schools are closed. Government offices are closed. So, for example, our hospital is not getting paid by the insurance companies because the insurance companies are closed. The whole economy is coming to a standstill, and pretty soon people are thinking maybe there'll be food shortages. As people are stopping importing, people are not opening their shops. So it's really having a profound impact, not just for those few patients who are affected by Ebola, but for the whole country.
Many public hospitals in West Africa have shut down or are refusing new patients. Why did the General Conference of Seventh-day Adventists decide to keep Cooper Adventist open?
Well, apparently Cooper Adventist Hospital has a history of not wanting to shut down during crisis situations. Back when there was civil war in Liberia, it also was one of the only hospitals open to treat patients. And so the staff kind of feel they have a mission, and that is to provide care for the Liberian people when no one else will. And while Ebola is dramatically killing people and in a way that catches the imagination, it's by far not the greatest thing killing people. Still, by far more people are dying of malaria and other treatable diseases such as C-sections, women in complicated labor, and other surgical diseases. And if with all the hospitals shut down because of the Ebola crisis, the death toll would soon far surpass anything that Ebola could do just due to other normally treatable diseases.
Can you describe this hospital for us?
Yeah, it's a very small hospital in the States. Probably wouldn't be considered more than a clinic. It's a three-story structure on a very tiny parcel of land. Right in the heart of the city. It was constructed about 50 years ago. It's old and run down.
I take it you're probably screening patients who come to the hospital to make sure that you're not dealing with people who have Ebola?
That's correct, because our hospital is so small, we don't have facilities for isolation or care for the volume of patients that would be coming in. So there's the ELWA hospital, which is really open specifically for the Ebola cases. They've been handling the brunt of the caseload there. And then now Doctors Without Borders is also set up on their campus. So anyone even suspicious of anything we're referring over there, where they can be isolated, their blood can be drawn, and it can be shipped to the one lab facility that's doing testing for Ebola. It's another handicap that there's only one place in the whole country where you can actually test patients for Ebola. But we are screening carefully, and anyone who's suspicious at all, we send where they can get better care and also where not be putting our other patients at risk.
What would you say to people with medical training who are thinking of volunteering but are on the fence because they're afraid?
Well, I mean, I can't say that I'm not afraid. In all my medical training, there's only one thing that's ever really scared me, and that's Ebola, because it is so lethal and happens so quickly and there's no known treatment. However, it's also not nearly as contagious as most people would like to think. It's not like if you're just walking in the same, area as a person with Ebola, you're going to get it. You need direct physical contact with their bodily fluids. Therefore, if normal universal precautions are taken and you're just very careful about, you know, screening patients and keeping yourself protected, wearing, you know, gloves and gowns and masks and things, there's actually a very low likelihood of you getting it.
Well, Dr. James Zappel, stay safe and thank you for talking with us.
Thank you.
That's Dr. James Zappel, currently working at Cooper Adventist Hospital in Monrovia, Liberia. The board of the nation's largest pension fund right here in California voted yesterday to approve 99 types of supplemental pay that will count towards pensions for government workers. CalPERS administers benefits for more than 3,000 local, city, and state agencies, or nearly 3 million people. Groups like the League of California Cities argued against the expansion, and the vote sparked an angry response from Governor Jerry Brown. The California Report's Sacramento Bureau Chief Scott Detrow has more.
The new rules approved by the California Public Employees Retirement System, or CalPERS, outline about 100 different pay categories that should be included when workers' final pensions are calculated. That will include short-term pay hikes awarded when an employee is given a temporary promotion to, say, fill in for someone else who's on leave. Brown says the move undermines the pension reforms he signed 2 years ago, which barred one-time or ad hoc payments aimed at spiking salaries in order to increase pension benefits. Brown says CalPERS, quote, got it wrong. And Chris McKenzie, the executive director of the California League of Cities, agrees.
And that is what the law said in 2012, is that ad hoc pay, which means special pay for a special purpose, if you look at the dictionary definition of ad hoc, that those kinds of pay should not be pensionable.
The Brown administration figures the change won't actually cost the state too much money. But the governor is worried the rules undermine the spirit of the 2012 law, even though CalPERS insists it's in line with the measure. For the California Report, I'm Scott Detrow in Sacramento.
And that's the California Report for Thursday, August 21st, a production of KQED Public Radio. I'm Rachel Miro. This is the California Report.
Funds for the California Report are provided by Eric and Wendy Schmidt, whose family foundation advances the wiser use of energy and natural resources on a planet where everything is connected. On the web at theschmidt.org. URS, a global engineering and construction firm working to improve California's public infrastructure, preserve the state's natural resources, and strengthen the environment. URS.com. And the James Irvine Foundation, expanding opportunity for the people of California and supporting the California Report since its premiere in 1995.